Book 8. What did the Trojans ever do for us? So, following on, Turnus raised the flag of war and there was immediate discombobulation. No one knew what was going on or who anyone was, and can you blame them? All these people were muddled together in weird caps and holding oddly shaped boomerangs and didn't have me there to narrate the situation and act as commentator for them. So they sent a bloke called Venulus to see another bloke called Diomede, who apparently might be able to tell them a thing or two about Aeneas. Aeneas, meanwhile, man of the hour, was beside himself. His mind was racing as he saw yet another war unfold before him. His thoughts were darting to and fro like light reflecting upon water from the sun or the moon, flickering far and wide across walls and high ceilings. It was late in the night before he managed to sleep. Having conveniently chosen a spot by the river, the god Tiber sat beside him as he dreamed. "We have been longing for your arrival, Aeneas. Don't give up now. The gods are no longer against you. This is your home. When you wake, you'll find a white pig with 30 piglets. This is a sign, obviously, that after 30 years, your son Ascanius will found Alba. Now, a few things you ought to know. I do hope you're the type who remembers your dreams. King Evander is the leader of the Arcadians, descended from Athene, and they named their city Palentium after her. Get it? Palentium? Palace? Good one, right? They're always fighting the Latins, always, so be friends with them. Follow my river upstream. I'll help you, and you'll get there. Make a few more prayers to Juno, just in case, and I wouldn't mind a couple as I am doing you quite a big favour right now. Up you get then, Aeneas. The stars are setting." Of course, Aeneas woke immediately, offered up several prayers to all the nymphs and gods of the river and promised to do so basically until the end of time. Remember, he's very pious. And then he got his men together to row upstream. On top of this, he just so happened to notice the white sow he'd heard so much about, which he then sacrificed to Juno to shut her up for, you know, maybe the next book or so, hopefully. The Trojans rode easily to Evander's kingdom, which was poor and humble in contrast to the Roman powerhouse it would become. It just so happened that Evander and his son Pallas, again, bit of a name drop, were performing their annual rites to Hercules outside the city when Aeneas and his men arrived. It's convenient, isn't it? And so he and all his leading senators and warriors could watch the Trojans row in. Very convenient and probably a really pretty perfect entrance. At least Aeneas actually came along to this one, unlike with, you know, King Latinus, but we'll just let that one slide, won't we? They were all a bit nervous, of course, but Pallas, who was bold and a bit cocky because he was a bit young, rushed forward to face the Trojans alone. "What do you want?" he called out. "Who are you? Friend or foe?" "Friend, I hope," Aeneas called from his ship, holding out an olive branch as a peace offering. Where do they, you know, just on this note, where on earth are they getting all these olive branches from? Like, do you think they keep a load on board, or is it like the same one just getting tattier and tattier each time they use it? Just wondering, like, think about it. Anyway. "I'm Aeneas, and we're the Trojans. We're exiles, stuck in a bit of a tight spot with the Latins, and we were hoping that Evander, who I'm told is your king, might help us out." "Oh, you want my dad," Pallas shrugged. "All right, you sound legit. Come on, come in." Aeneas stepped ashore, and they shook hands, a sign of friendship before then addressing Evander. "King, I was told I would finally find friendship in the Greeks, and here you are. My entire life is dictated by fate, and besides, our people are basically the same. My ancestor, Dardanus of Troy, was the grandson of Atlas, who holds the whole world on his shoulders. And believe me, I know how that feels. And you, I believe, are his great-grandson. So we're the same, and that's why I come to you in person. We're fighting a common enemy. Evander smiled and shook his hand.
Aeneas, I know exactly who you are. I remember your father, Anchises.
He came,
head and shoulders above the rest, when Priam visited this city when I was a child. You are much like him. I admired him greatly. I'll admit it, he gave me a cloak and a quiver of arrows and golden bridles when he left that I passed down to my son, who I see you already met. Of course I'll help. But seeing as you have arrived during our rites, you may as well join in the festivities with us.
It had been a long time since the Trojans had had a party. The feast was refreshed and Aeneas was given a seat of honour made out of maple wood and a lion's skin, in case you wanted to know that. While they watched, and the final sacrifices occurred. The men then got to enjoy roasted entrails and the sacrificial ox, which was very tasty, I'm sure. Anyway,
you might be wondering what all this is about,
Evander said to Aeneas, nodding at the celebrations.
It's a worship we perform annually, because we were saved from great danger, you know. You see that cavern over there? Now it's totally destroyed.
Evander gestured to a load of boulders by a mountain.
Well, once there lived an awful creature, only half human, called Cacus, the son of Vulcan. He ate our people for breakfast and had an horrible habit of belching black fire from his mouth. He was also a burglar, so one time he stole 8 cows from Hercules, who happened to be passing by. They dragged them in backwards, very sneaky-like, reversing the track so no one could chase them. Cows, of course, aren't stupid. And they all started lowing in the fields about their missing friends, you know. And one of the cows of the kids lowed back, which rather gave the game away. Hercules was furious. We'd never seen Cacus afraid before, not ever. He ran and hid in his cave, covering the entrance with a great rock. Hercules tried 3 times to force his way in. 3 times he circled the Aventine Mountain to no avail. Eventually, though, he found the weak spot above the ridge of the very top of the cave, and when he leant his whole weight against it, broke away. The whole cave was exposed, like looking down into the underworld. Horrid it was. Cacus was trapped in the light, horrified, and Hercules attacked him with anything he could get his hand on. Rocks, trees, small children. Okay, joking, sorry, but couldn't resist that. You name it. Cacus was going mad, smoking like a furnace, though it did no good. And long story short, Hercules dumped down and choked him to death with his bare hands. He took back his cattle and then dragged out the corpse for us all to see. Rather foul. So, we've honoured Hercules ever since. We call it our greatest altar, for obvious reasons. Would you like some wine? I'm a bit parched after all of that, to be honest.
Bloody hell, Aeneas muttered as they poured the libations. I'll drink to that. The men continued into the evening, where they were led by Potitius, who originally founded the celebrations for Hercules. The feast started for a second time, and the Salii, priests of Mars, you might know them, they jump a lot. So look into that one, guys. Read up on that on your own time, okay? Very interesting. Joined in with a chorus of old men and warriors on either side, singing the legends of Hercules, the stories of the snakes he killed as a baby, all of his labours, that kind of thing. They sang of the cruelty of Juno and also the savage nature of Cacus. All in all, it's a fabulous ritual, very pious, and lots of wine. That night, they all returned to the city, but Evander, who was old, like all good kings in this story, as I probably have mentioned several times now, was slow. And he and Aeneas and Pallas meandered home, and as they did, he pointed out all the relics and areas of interest, and the walk was made quicker by the stories he told.
These very woods were the haunts of nymphs and fauns. People they were wild, but Saturn, in flight from Jupiter at the time, came here and made them civilized, called the place Latium. He brought a golden age of peace, #Augustus. But it was lost, of course. There have been many wars, many names, and many kings. I was exiled myself, you know, but fortune drove me here. I understand what it's like to tread a path that's not your own choosing.
Evander then took Aeneas and Pallas, though he'd probably seen and heard all of this a million times before, and would be bored out of his mind, I expect, on a whistle-stop tour of ye old Rome. He pointed out the altar of Carmentis, who first foretold the fate of Aeneas and Troy. Then the sanctuary of Romulus, the Lupercal, which you can actually still see now in the Forum if you want. It's very good. And the house of Tarpeia and the Capitol, which had a strange presence to it.
Feel that?
Evander shivered.
There is some god here.
#Augustus.
We don't know which, though some claim to have seen Jupiter. These are the old walls and the cities of Janus and Saturn, right here.
Evander's home, when they reached it, was humble and would one day be the Roman Forum, though at that time it was full of cows.
Hercules stooped to enter my home, and I hope you'll do the same, Aeneas. Do not judge it, if you can. There are greater powers in this world than wealth.
He showed Aeneas to a bed of leaves, and they all promptly fell asleep. Probs the wine, to be honest. Does help. Venus, the only one with any sense of impending doom, rushed to Vulcan, her long-suffering yet adoring husband, all aflutter. Darling, darling, you know how much I adore you, don't you? Yes, yes. You know I'd never ask anything of you unless I truly needed it, don't you? I never asked you to help my son during that beastly war, did I? But Jupiter has let him settle in Italy now, and I ask you as Aeneas' mother. Why, he's practically your stepson. Surely you don't want to see him suffer. Don't want to see me suffer, do you, darling? My darling Vulcan, darling. Vulcan hesitated, so Venus did what Venus does best and wrapped her arms around him. She probably also took off her clothes. Vulcan literally caught fire. Poor transparent soul. Venus was well aware of her beauty and knew how to use it. He could never resist her in a million years. I'd do anything for you. I'd have made the Trojans' armour during the war, even then, if it would have made you happy. Of course I'll help. And then they probably had sex. The next morning, in the hours when women at home would get up to dust the hearth and begin their spinning by lamplight, Vulcan went to work. His workshop was in a deep cave filled with the sounds of thunder, where the Cyclopes working for him forged the great lightning bolts for Jupiter. In another part of the cave, which was in an island, by the way, called Vulcania, very original name yet again, Cyclopes were working on a great chariot for Mars that he uses to stir men to war. In another, some Cyclopes were polishing Athene's armour and her enormous, horrific aegis. Stop all that for now, lads, Vulcan called out, dropping his bag and packed lunch on his bench. We've got to make armour for my wife's half-mortal son. Come on! They set to work on the bronze immediately. Meanwhile, Evander woke early back in his hut. He dressed simply, not forgetting his panther skin and sword, and went with his two loyal dogs to Pallas to find Aeneas and Achates, who were also wandering around early. He had not forgotten his promise to help.
Aeneas,
Evander began, as they sat down for breakfast.
The best thing we have on our side is your name, I'll admit, but we're also on the side of fate. We are not far here from Agylla, which was once ruled by Mezentius.
Foul man.
I won't repeat all the murders and atrocities he committed, though he did invent a new form of torture where living men were basically, they were put up against the dead ones, hand to hand and face to face. It was just disgusting, they were like sewn together. Anyway, getting carried away. His own people drove him out, and he was given shelter by a man named Turnus. There are thousands of people who want Mezentius given up for what he did, but they were told a prophecy that they could never attack him under the instructions of an Italian. You, of course, are not Italian. Which is most helpful? It's you, I reckon, who must lead these men into war against Mezentius and against the Latins. Pallas will come with you. I am too old. You'll show him how to be a fine warrior.
Aeneas wasn't looking too happy about leading another war, and neither was Achates, so Venus filled the heavens with a bit of thunder and lightning, though I'm sure that's probably Jupiter's job, so I don't know how that one went down. The sound of clashing armour filled the air, and though everyone else was rightly startled, Aeneas grinned. Oh, it's my mum. She promised to let me know if a war would happen. She's going to give me some armour from Vulcan, her husband, you know. Have I said she's a goddess? It's really helpful. That's all, you know, that'll be even better than what Achilles had, I've been told. The Latins are so screwed. Aeneas, alongside Evander and the rest of the Trojans, performed some rites to Hercules, of course. He then went back to his men, picked out the bravest for war, and sent the rest, poor things, I mean that's a bit humiliating, isn't it really, back to tell Ascanius what his dad was up to. Rumour flitted from door to door in the city, casting fear and anxiety into every mother's heart. Before they left, Evander took Pallas aside.
If I had any chance, my son, I would turn back the clock and I would go in your place. Best of all, neither of us would leave one another at all, and we would live in peace. To think Mezentius, one man, could cause all of this. If Jupiter hears me now, I pray him to keep you safe. You are my only child. You are all I have in this world. Look after yourself. I would rather die myself right now than have you not come home again. Do be careful and listen to Aeneas.
As soon as he finished speaking, Evander collapsed and had to be carried inside. Aeneas and the men rode out to battle in one glorious parade, with Pallas shining bright as the morning star among them. After the women waved them tearfully off, the Trojans arrived at the next camp. Venus sought out Aeneas and pulled him to one side, away from the others, who, believe it or not, might have found the presence of a goddess a little bit distracting. Oh, sweetie, how are you? Oh, hold on. You've just got a little bit of dirt. Sorry, darling. I know. I fussed too much. I'm sorry, I can't help it. Here's the armour, I promised. She embraced Aeneas, laid the armour down, and vanished, just like that. Great. Aeneas had never seen anything like it. The sword and helmet were pretty cool, but the shield, Vulcan had managed to illustrate the whole story of Italy, the glory of all of Rome, right there. Are you ready? Because this is very much the Roman take on Achilles' shield, okay? You gotta make notes for this one. If you've ever wanted the entire mythological history of Rome condensed into a couple of minutes, you've got a treat coming up, guys. Right, here we go. So, number one, we've got the wolf with Romulus and Remus. Cool. Number two, the rape of the Sabine women. Three, we've got the chariots that tore Metus in two pieces, with Tullus dragging his body through a wood. Now, if you really want the full story for anything that is being mentioned here, the best place to look is in Livy's History of Rome. I will give you some information, but not all of it. Okay. Fourth, we have Paul Senna, who was ordering the Romans to take Tarquin back after he'd been expelled from the city. We've also got Horatius Cocles, who's standing on the bridge. Now, basically, Horatius Cocles was one of these big Republican Roman heroes that they like to think about when the glory of the Republic was failing and the Golden Age was gone, blah, blah, blah. And he basically stood against the Etruscans. He was a bit of an idiot. The Etruscans were coming into Rome and they were going to come in over a bridge. So even though all the other Romans ran away, Horatius stood there on the bridge and one man, believe it or not, against all those Etruscans, scared them so much that they actually faltered and basically they never got into Rome. You've also got Cloelia on this shield. She's swimming. Again, I don't know how they fit all this much in, but anyway. And basically, she and a few other girls were stolen by the Etruscans and kept as hostage. But the big thing about Cloelia is that she's a woman, and believe it or not, she had her own brain, and she actually escaped with some other girls back to the Romans, and her courage was seen as so great that she went down in history, which is pretty cool. Okay. Then, at the top of the shield, you've got Manlius and the geese, and basically that's the story. Manlius is a Roman, he was on this hill, I think it's the Capitoline, and the Gauls were about to invade, and a goose woke him up, and therefore he saved Rome. It literally as great as all that. A few priests also just added like here and there, because you know, piety is very important. And you've got the Salii and the Lupercii there, and you can imagine the Salii are very famous priests in Rome at that time that Virgil was writing. And again, the Lupercii are also really ancient as well. Lupercii, Lupercal, you can see where that one's going. Okay. The bottom has Hades, naturally, and Catiline is there, along with Cato administering justice, which is great. So Catiline's in Tartarus, to be clear. He's not a good guy. He's very much a bad guy. If you want to know any more about Catiline, please go and read Cicero's Catilinarian speeches. They are perfect and wonderful because Cicero is wonderful. But anyway, and Cato, obviously another very staunch Republican figure, administering justice as always. Then running along these, you've got the ocean all the way around, which was golden and dotted with silver dolphins. They really like dolphins. Augustus loved dolphins. Dolphins are linked to Venus, just putting that in, and Augustus was related to Venus. Are we getting this through Aeneas? You see now, this is all coming together, guys. In the middle of the shield, you've got the Battle of Actium, which was 31 BC, by the way, guys. And Virgil gets a little bit impassioned here, probably because Augustus was listening. So I'll give you the basic rundown. Augustus is there, of course, leading his men and people, hashtag SPQR, into battle with all the signs of his father's divinity blazing, you know, around his head. Agrippa, the real reason Actium was actually successful, is alongside his best mate. And then you've got Antony and Cleopatra pictured opposite, decked out in all their, you know, xenophobic glory. And they dared to attack over Neptune's fields, the sea, with all their apparently barbaric gods behind them. So Anubis is fighting directly against Venus, Athene, and Neptune himself. Basically, think Rome versus the world. The war to end all wars. Somehow, this one small section of shield also managed to illustrate Mars, the Furies, and Discord, etc. Think all the bad gods you can think of, all joining in just for the fun of it. And then the whole of the Eastern world fleeing from Augustus and his glorious Romans until Cleopatra was the last one left standing. How on earth this is all possible to cram in, like, I do not understand. I mean, did Vulcan make it like some kind of comic strip? I mean, really, apparently you could also see that Cleopatra was pale with death. I don't know how one is made pale on a bronze shield, but anyway, I'm getting distracted. Cleopatra is obviously killed, and the personified Nile is defeated. The magical never-ending shield also portrayed somewhere the victory of Augustus, not that he was really present at Actium. I think this is the battle where he spent a lot of time in bed sick. He did that most battles. There's one, I'm sure, where he hides in the bushes. Anyway, and his triumphs throughout Rome, his triumphs, surrounded by cheering women, confetti, flowers, and dead animals at every single altar. Finally, there was yet more room for Augustus again, seated at the marble temple to Apollo, receiving all the people of the world as his suppliants. That was a bit exhausting, wasn't it, guys? Goodness me. Luckily for us, Aeneas understood none of that at all, so the entire thing was utterly wasted on him. Great. He admired the pictures, and he especially liked the dolphins. Actually, they were nice. And then he lifted up the shield, having no idea that as he did so, he had just shouldered the legacy and the fortune of his descendants.